founder and executive director of the Missing Grace Organization, which is an international support organization serving to help families on their journey through pregnancy and infant loss, infertility, and adoption. She's personally experienced tragedy in her own life when her daughter Grace was stillborn. Thank you, Candy, for stepping in at the very last minute here to do this show.
You bet. No problem.
You know, we haven't talked about infant loss and stillborn death or miscarriage at all in the last 3 years when we've done this show, and so this is a really important show. And for those who are listening, this show is going to replay on Memorial Day, so if you know somebody that's dealing with this type of loss, they can tune into KTOE on Monday at the same time, and this show is going to be replayed because it's a very, very important show, Candy. And thank you again for taking the time to do this. Will you tell us what happened with your baby Grace?
Yeah, well, it was 2001, it was December, and for 2 weeks I had noticed decreased fetal movement, and I was quite concerned about that. I wasn't too terribly concerned, though, as far as I thought it was past that tragic marker of the first trimester miscarriage time frame, and so I thought we were going to be okay, but I was still concerned as to my baby's well-being because she, at the time, I didn't know it was a girl, but the baby was not moving hardly at all, if maybe just a couple times a day, which is not a normal amount of activity. So I would go into the doctor, and I would say, you know, my baby doesn't move anymore. And they'd say, well, drink orange juice, call us in 24 hours if the baby hasn't moved and come back in. Well, I did that six times. I would drink the orange juice and lay on my side and wait for the baby to move and poke and prod, and nothing would happen. And I would go into the clinic, and they would put the Doppler on, and they'd say, well, the baby's heart rate's 150 beats a minute. That's a great heart rate. Send me home. And each time I would say, please, is there, you know, any tests I could do? They'd say, really, you don't need an ultrasound. You don't need any additional testing. You're in your last trimester. Babies slow down in the last trimester. They don't move as much. And this is all quite normal, and you're only, you know, 32 weeks at this time, and there's nothing additional we need to do. Well, on my seventh visit, following the same sequence of events, I went in, and they couldn't find the heart rate. And she said, well, this is quite normal. Sometimes the babies are kind of hiding up there, and we just can't get a good heart rate, so mm-hmm. let's go ahead and send you for an ultrasound. So I went to the ultrasound, and that was the day my life changed forever, and it was a very tragic and horrible moment in all ways, because even the way we were handled just was not with compassion or care. And we went into this ultrasound room, and the tech called in the radiologist, and the radiologist just cleared her throat and militantly spoke the most horrible words and said, well, as you can see, we are looking at the heart chamber. There is no heartbeat. The baby is dead. She turned on her heel and just kind of over her shoulder said, I'm sorry, and left the room. And
oh my gosh.
The tech stood up and said, you need to leave now, and you're going to have to go take care of it. And I said, it? What are you talking about? I'm 33 weeks pregnant. Right. I've got a full belly. We're ready to have a baby. And she goes, right. Well, it's dead, and you must go to the hospital now to deliver it. And the next morning, I went through 22 hours of labor. I died while I was in labor. I flatlined. I kept telling the nurses, I said, something's wrong with me. My heart isn't feeling right. And they said, well, that's normal. Labor's hard. And I said, no, something's different. And so they got out the crash kit and everything, and
I had
a pretty amazing out-of-body experience, and I delivered my daughter an hour after I came back, and she was perfect in every way except she had a cord issue, and with an early delivery and early intervention, she could have lived.
You know, nobody listened to you at all through this whole thing, did they?
No, my concerns were dismissed, as they are for so many women that we hear from. Especially first-time moms, you know, they're considered to be over-worried and that they really don't have the knowledge to know what's happening with their baby. And I really, truly believe in the intuition of a woman. And I believe that we have a connectedness to our babies when we are carrying them, that we know signs and symptoms. A lot of women later after they lose their baby will say, you know what, now that I think back, there were things that I just ignored, or I didn't want to listen to, or I was too busy to deal with. And so I do believe there are signs for many of us. Not all women, but a lot of us do have signs.
Candy, did you feel betrayed by the people that were looking over you, that they didn't hear you, and then to be told so abruptly that your baby died?
You know, it's a very lonely and horrible feeling. You know, I have a Jewish some Jewish relatives, and I think I've always been stirred by what happened to Jewish people, and I literally felt like a Jewish person about to be exterminated. Like there was no value for my life, there was no consideration for my feelings or my needs. That I was just not seen as somebody important, and that really was an amazing feeling to go from, you know, feeling like from my friends and family and everyone who's excited about this baby and the fact that I'm a woman carrying life and, you know, people looked at me differently as I was pregnant. They would smile at me and all of a sudden it all changed within an instant. I was a bother. I was a nuisance. I was, you know, something that, you know, nobody wanted to deal with. And that's really a horrible thing because that loneliness continues because once you lose a baby, you're kind of in this club that nobody wants to be a member of. So all the pregnant friends kind of think, boy, if I hang around with you, maybe my baby will die too. People get kind of superstitious and people feel like, you know, I don't want to be around you because you're so sad and so depressed and I just want to be around happy people. And so it really does put you in a class of your own and you're kind of in a club that is, you didn't even want to be a member of it, but you are, and here you are, and now you have to figure out how to deal with life.
And, you know, a lot of times, so many people who go through the what you went through or miscarriage, they're discounted so much, their need to grieve or that they need to grieve. They're not, they're not, like we were talking earlier today, is like so many people just think, well, just have another baby.
Right, and it's not a solution because no matter how many babies you have, you'll always miss the one that you lost. And, you know, I literally talk with hundreds of moms a year, and last year we assisted over 700 families through our organization. And, you know, every single one of them will say, even after I had a subsequent child, I was still longing for, missing, and thinking about the baby I lost. And that's true for me today. You know, I continually think about my daughter. The pain is not debilitating like it was that first year. I don't feel anymore like I can't get out of bed and there's nothing to live for. I don't have all the physical experiences that grief puts on you where you kind of have chest pains and headaches. And that's all very real and very intense. I mean, there were times I seriously thought I must be having a heart attack because my heart hurts so bad. That does go away over time, but the longing and the wondering and the wishing, and as you see other people's children the age of your child, and like my daughter would be 4 and a half now, I look at the 4 and a half year olds and I think, oh my gosh, they're learning those things now and they're doing so many cool things, and I miss what I'm missing out on at this particular age with my daughter.
When I hear this from you, I just hear that yearning for that life that Grace would have lived, that person who she would have become, and I hear that loss of dreams so much, and that's something we don't really put value into. So many people who are going through this is that when you lose a child, no matter what age, but even especially one that you were going to give birth to, but there wasn't a living birth with her, is that loss of hope and that loss of dream never goes away, does it?
No, and you can't rate the value of a child's life by how long you carried them or how long you had them, and that's one of the greatest difficulties I think that bereaved parents deal with is, I call it the grief-o-meter. There is a grief-o-meter everybody has, and they continually point it at people, and they literally will give a range of time that they're okay with you grieving and that they're okay with you being sad about what happened to you. And some people, their grief-o-meter has a very short time span on it. It's maybe a month. And they think, after a month, you better get over with it, deal with it, move on. There's better things to look forward to, and life gives hard knocks to everybody, and you just better, you know. And then there's some people whose grief-o-meter doesn't even have a month on it. You know, they say, well, it was miscarried, or, you know, it wasn't really a baby, so what are you so sad about? Or, you know, and they'll say, well, at least you didn't lose a five-year-old, you know. That's a horrible thing, because when you lose a five-year-old, then you have these experiences. Well, the response from a person like me who's had a stillbirth is, at least you got 5 years. I got nothing. I didn't get laughter. I didn't get to see her eyes open. I didn't, you know, and when you sit and talk amongst bereaved parents, they'll say, oh, you got to have time in the NICU for 2 weeks and you got to see your baby alive. Wow, what I would have done to have 2 weeks with my baby alive. And Diamond Rio has that song, One More Day, and I think that's how it is. I'd always want one more day.
Yeah.
one day isn't enough. I'd want one more, and then one more after that. And ultimately, we want a lifelong time with our children. They should outlive us. Right. We should be bearing our children.
You know, Candy, when I hear you talk, I've listened. One of the gifts that I give people is I listen to people about their losses, and I honor their stories. But I feel it's such a dangerous place to get into comparing. I like what you said about the rating.
The grief-o-meter?
Right. Yeah. I think that's really important, that it's so dishonoring to say to somebody, to compare, well, at least you got to see your child get to the first year or something like that. It's so, why can't we just honor everybody where they're at, you know, and quit this? You know, when I hear this kind of talk, I always think this is people trying to think about loss. They're going from their eyebrows up. They're trying to make some sense that this pain is worse or this one's worse, and it doesn't even matter, does it? That kind of thinking just causes more and more pain.
Well, and some people, you know, I think about the people who call us, and they've been trying for 15 years to have a baby. They've gone through IVF and every fertility treatment you can imagine, and then they miscarry a child at 9 or 10 weeks, and then nobody acknowledges it. They just think, well, it was a miscarriage.
Right.
They
right.
didn't see the child. They didn't hold the child. They never had a baby shower. But to that person who's gone through a life of longing and
right.
wanting and wishing and hoping, and now they have nothing, and they're 40 years old, and it doesn't look good to ever have a child, you know, that miscarriage was everything. That miscarriage was total devastation for them to lose that baby.
I was,
you know, there really is no time frame you can put on someone's grief and no
right.
measure of which stage it's okay to lose a child at.
You know, Candy, I think people have a really hard time with knowing how to respond. I remember one time working with a family that she gave birth to the baby, and it died. The baby died right before it was given birth. And so they went through all this anticipation of having a baby, and for some reason the baby died before it was born. And so I was working with the family, and the family went ahead and decided for the mom and dad that they went to the house and they cleaned out the entire nursery, put everything away, packed it all up before she got there, and my job was to prepare the family for this young couple to come home. And when I found out that the family went ahead and did this, I was appalled. I was scared for them because they took away this couple's journey of actually dealing with this, to take it and put away. I mean, do you understand what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I was just in the hospital with a woman. I do hospital visits, and I meet with hundreds of parents who have come to that place where they've lost the baby and they've delivered the baby. And they were in the room, and the parents were getting ready to leave and go pack up everything. Just like you said, this was just a couple weeks ago. I was in the hospital
right.
with the family. And they said, you know, well, we're going to go leave now and go pack up. And I just said, well, can I just have you pause for a second
yeah.
to reconsider? I said, you know, those things and those items and everything you prepared in love does not, taking it down doesn't take away the grief.
Right.
And putting it away is not going to make it all better. And you know what? You can close that door.
Right.
And when she's ready, she can go in there
right.
and cry and weep over those things and process her grief and lovingly put those things in boxes. And,
right.
you know, if she has subsequent children, those things aren't so sacred that they can't be used by that other child. If,
right.
if that child lived, you'd be sharing those things with your next children, you know, that your siblings share stuff. And so let her just go process. And for me, I was so glad my stuff wasn't all gone. I mean, some of it was on order still, so I didn't even have it all set up yet. But the things that were in her room, I just sat there and I would, you know, my daughter had an underwater with dolphins theme, and so she had dolphins and murals painted all over her walls, and it was real beautiful. And I just turned on the ocean music and sat there and just wept over her and held a stuffed animal and her blanket, and that was a place of peace for me, and it was a place to process. And I really have not met a parent yet who said, oh, my word, I was so glad that everybody took everything away and that I didn't
right.
have a baby room to come home to.
Right. And, you know, that I think that's people's intent to help, but it's not. You don't shortcut this. You don't shortcut this, and you don't help people get over it.
Right. I mean, people's intentions are good, but everybody's reacting in shock, and the grandparents are reacting in shock, and everybody's just,
right.
oh, my gosh, what do we do, and how do we help, you know, we make rash decisions out of that shock, and that's a really good time for other people to step in and say, you know what, I know you're reacting out of your shock, and let's just take a step back and let's go slower with some of these decisions because, you know, we might regret those. And, you know, a lot of women will say to the nurses, I don't want to hold the baby. And their instant reaction is, if I could disconnect from that child right now, it's not going to hurt so bad.
Right.
And every mom who calls me who didn't hold their child and didn't take the pictures and didn't have that special time, they have huge regrets. They have every kind of regret, and they, I can't believe I didn't want to hold my baby. How could I have done that? I'm such a bad mom. And they have all these horrible regrets, and so I encourage people, please soak in every detail of that child and just love that baby for all you can in that little precious time you have with them, and take 100 pictures. You know, people will take 24 and think that's enough, and you know, in a lifetime, we take how many thousands of pictures and take every angle and everybody holding the baby and different outfits and different hats. And you know, there's such a precious thing of coming into a hospital and being able to be part of that time with the family and let them leave without having regrets.
Right. You know,
and,
Candy, I want to let the listeners know your website because there's a lot of great stuff on there. You want to give that?
It's missinggrace.org, missinggrace.org, and that stands for Grieve, Restore, Arise, Commemorate, Educate, which is what we do with our programs. And then that's our organization website, but then my personal website is missinggrace.com. Now, that's where it all started. I created missinggrace.com as a journal and just to process my grief, my daughter, and then it grew to where I was getting over 100 emails a day and all of these people saying they had no resources and no support groups and didn't have the help they needed. And so I started Missing Grace Organization, and it's grown from there. So, go ahead.
Thank you so much, Candy. This song you asked for, so many of you are going to love this song by Twyla Paris. It's Visitor from Heaven. Again, this show will be on next Monday.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Hang on.
Life After Loss is underwritten by One Bright Star.